alone, and does our secret space program use this already? I'm pretty sure they do, but I just want to elaborate a little bit on that.
Yeah, well, that's a very important part of the whole kind of question surrounding how to use these advanced technologies. And it was something that that the Nazis were very heavily involved in. You know, that kind of mind technology interface that needed to be there at some level to be able to use these technologies. That you know, when the Nazi research of ancient cultures took place. And even predating them, the German secret societies that were also involved in that. Now, they discovered that the ancient human civilizations, Atlantis, Hyperborea, Lemuria, and so forth, that these civilizations had all successfully been able to kind of use technology with enhanced mental abilities, so that there was that kind of mind technology interface. And so they tried to replicate that. And I think that this took the Nazis some time to achieve that, but eventually, like any technical problem, eventually you come up with a solution. But certainly, they would have appreciated the fact that certain grey or certain extraterrestrial races, such as the Greys, that are kind of really synthetic life forms anyway, that they can be easily more easily cloned and reproduced for the purpose of, you know, being able to pilot ships, or used in that kind of technology mind interface. So, they're kind of specifically built for that. And so they're ideal for that. But I think that the secret space programs have been definitely trying to train, succeeding generations of humans to be able to better do that themselves.
I agree. Well, to me, it seems like it's all about mastering consciousness in one form or another. And it really doesn't matter if you're interfaced or not. But what's interesting to me is I know that they have artificial telepathy, what we call synthetic telepathy, and the military has used this and has contracts with it. I'm wondering to what degree they've really interfaced that into the quote-unquote mind technology interface. It sounds like that's something that would be that they would use to some degree. What's your impression of that?
Oh, it's very interesting. Charles Hall, he was the first person that I came across that talked about this synthetic technology or this synthetic telepathy, just basically electronic forms of telepathy that he experienced back in the early 1960s at Nellis Air Force Base. And so this was something that the Air Force was learning. And of course, then you have the DARPA being able to kind of reproduce that. So I think that they do have this kind of electronic form of telepathy that they can use to kind of like interface with people, kind of so-called mind of God technologies, where all of a sudden you start hearing the voice in the head telling you that, you know, that that they're this angel or something, and you're their appointed prophet or something, and they just kind of manipulate you down that merry track.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Seems like it would be the ultimate mind control program, if you ask me. And then you add on something like psychotronic hardware, and then you've got, you know, a target or somebody who's being programmed. But I find it very interesting, that whole technology, and I have a history behind it. That's why I asked. But very, very fascinating in general. But I believe that we are all naturally telepathic to begin with, and it seems to me like they just like to hijack, once again, our natural abilities and then use them to, as a template, on the brainwave level to interface with an artificial intelligence. And my question to you is what is your take on the AI that they talk about? Now, some people will reference an artificial intelligence associated with the etheric realm, and other people talk about one that's just a quantum computer in the secret space program. What is your impression of that?
Well, the AI is a really interesting one, interesting question. I first came across it when I was reading the literature about the extraterrestrial contact case in Italy called the Amicizia or the Friendship case, from basically 1956 to 1978. A group of extraterrestrials, kind of human-looking extraterrestrials, were having contact with kind of senior people in the Italian government and other NATO countries. And so that over a 22-year, they were kind of very prominent in exposing themselves to these people. But they were saying that their enemy was a synthetic life form, basically an AI that had hunted them across the galaxy, and that they were engaged in this military conflict with this AI life form. And that was very interesting, because I basically said that what happened was that in 1978, their bases in the Adriatic were destroyed by these AI life forms. And so then you have the kind of material from Corey Good, who also talks about the AI that the secret space programs are guarding against, because this is a phenomenon that has happened again and again. You have humans developing AI and technologies, and then the AI is successfully implanted into a kind of synthetic life form or a body that kind of looks human enough, but really isn't. It's an AI being. It's not soul embodied. It's artificial intelligence, and that kind of leads to this kind of new phase in galactic war, where it's humans or organic life forms against synthetic life forms.
Mm-hmm. It makes perfect sense to me. That's quite fascinating. And I remember hearing you in an interview not too long ago. You were talking about the I guess it was a saucer that had crashed back in Italy in 1933. Can you elaborate on that?
Sure. That's really the first kind of documented UFO crash that we know of. And that was something that the Italian government was involved in. Benito Mussolini was the Prime Minister of Italy at the time. And he basically classified that technology that was recovered above top secret. And the Italians began to do their own kind of studies. Guglielmo Marconi, the famous kind of inventor of the radio waves, or one of the two inventors of the radio waves, he was involved in that Italian study. And at some point, the Italians began to share that information with the Germans, who were also involved in that kind of flying saucer technology as well. So basically, this was like 14 years before Roswell. So Roswell is definitely not the start of the kind of UFO age. Italy, in terms of crash retrievals, the first one was Italy in 33.
That's fascinating to me. Nobody ever talks about that. I don't hear them anyway. I think this is quite interesting. Were there any occupants?
There's not too much known about actually any occupants of the craft. What is known from the documents that were released publicly was just the shape of the craft, a kind of your traditional flying saucer craft, around, I think it was somewhere in the range of 50 feet, that was recovered. So there was some kind of a crash, and whoever was piloting the craft, according to the documents, they must have just gotten away. But the vehicle itself was retrieved. So, and that's when the Italians and then the Germans really got heavily involved into the whole kind of reverse engineering of these flying saucers.
Go ahead.
Yeah, for the Germans, it really began before that. The German secret societies, it began in the early 1920s with the Brill Society, where you had the German psychics, Maria Orsich, Sigrun, and the others that were part of the Brill Society, that they were in communication with some different ET races and inner Earth civilizations, and they got the instructions for building a flying saucer device, or a teleportation device, however you want to describe it. And so the Germans began to work on that in the 1920s into the early 1930s. And then when Hitler came to power in 1933, he suddenly discovered that, eventually he discovered that these German secret societies were heavily involved in this kind of development of advanced technologies, which required enhanced mental abilities, and of course Hitler actually was heavily involved in secret societies himself. The Thule Society actually was was the organization that actually established the German Workers' Party, which was the forerunner to the Nazi Party. So Hitler basically just in his position as head of Nazi Germany provided the German secret societies the financial resources and the scientific know-how to be able to move forward in their reverse engineering.
Mm-hmm. It's so fascinating to me. So it sounds like the Nazis were way ahead of the game insofar as reverse engineered craft. Now, my question to you is, when all of these, during the war, they had all these sightings, were a lot of these sightings associated or affiliated with Hitler's reverse engineered craft versus an off-world, legitimate UFO?
It's a bit of both. Okay. You know, the thing is, we've had many different ET civilizations, and also, Earth civilizations with flying saucers and those kinds of technologies that are able to kind of view us. Now, the thing to keep in mind here with Germany and the secret space programs was that Germany had two secret space programs. The first secret space program was run by the secret societies. And Hitler and the Nazi SS didn't have full control, and it's actually questionable how much control they had over the secret societies. In many ways, Hitler was a puppet. He was basically put in position by the German secret societies as a Führer. And even though he seemed to have kind of absolute power, when it came to these secret space programs, he didn't have power. But he did have the Nazi SS run a separate program, a parallel program to the secret societies program. And that Nazi program wasn't as sophisticated. Certainly didn't have as much in the terms of the kind of fully developed flying saucer technologies that the secret societies had developed in Germany. But they had enough that they felt that they could deploy these in times for the war effort. But the German secret societies, even before World War II broke out in September of 1939, the German secret societies had already begun relocating to South America and to Antarctica, because they saw that eventually Germany would be embroiled in a massive world war, and that and Europe would not be a good place to be doing this kind of advanced engineering of new fleets of flying saucers.
Mm-hmm. And which program did the U.S. inherit after the war? Was it the SS program, or was it the other one from the secret societies for the secret space program?
They largely inherited the Nazi SS program. I mean, Operation Paperclip scientists, they were brought over, and they were involved in the Nazi SS programs because they were there in Europe. The Germans who had relocated to Antarctica and South America, none of them were relocated. These were the ones that had the most advanced technologies. So they were working in Antarctica. And of course, people know about Operation High Jump under Admiral Byrd. That naval expedition was thoroughly defeated, comprehensively defeated, basically by Nazi flying saucers. Those saucers were a kind of collaboration between, the German secret societies and the Nazi SS, who had been able to secretly go to Antarctica before the war ended, before they were captured. But certainly, yes, what was in the United States was the kind of lesser developed of the two Nazi secret space programs.
That's fascinating. Well, didn't they used to call, was it Antarctica was called the New Berlin?
Yeah, there was a part of Antarctica which is now called Queen Maud Land, when the Germans established their bases there, it was called New Schwabia or New Schwabenland. But definitely that was an area where the Germans were able to find bases underground that they were able to successfully expand and move many hundreds of thousands of people in there. And some estimates go as high as 7 million, which is quite an extraordinary number. But, it's possible anywhere between 7 million to several hundred thousand people relocated to Antarctica to build the German flying saucer fleets.
That's fascinating. So what do you think happened to these people? Obviously, they're still not there, or have they decided to go off planet and go elsewhere to another planet?
Well, I think the German elites, or the Aryans that went there, they basically developed these technologies because they were more interested in kind of galactic conquest. I think that they, it goes back to Maria Orsic and the whole Rule Society. They were very interested in meeting the beings from Aldebaran and basically reconnecting with them, because when they in the communications it became clear that they had a lot of in common, the Aldebarans in terms of being a kind of Aryan civilization, that they had a lot in common with the German secret society. So they definitely wanted to kind of go out there and establish diplomatic relations with these Aldebarans. And the important thing is that the German secret societies, they were not so much interested in planetary conquest, which sounds strange because, of course, there was a world war, and the Nazis were clearly involved in attempting to establish planetary conquest. But this is the big difference, which a lot of people miss, is that the German secret societies, they had more in common with the kind of occult societies in other nations than they did with the kind of SS, the Nazi SS, who had this kind of very rigid kind of racial philosophy. The secret societies understood that really power comes from your mind, your ability to be able to harness consciousness, not so much racial purity. Even though that's a part of the equation, it's really all about being able to use higher consciousness. So, and so this was something that they understood. So they were not interested so much in planetary conquest, but more just establishing a presence out in the stars and eventually asserting their kind of destiny in the galaxy, if you like.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like, to me, I mean, that sounds like a beautiful utopia. I mean, to me, on an ascension level, it sounds like just wanting to merge with higher levels of consciousness and what I call our galactic neighborhood once again. It's interesting. So somewhere along the way, some of the secret societies became contaminated, or did they? Or is it just something else that's taking on the form of a secret society? And what we see today seems like a lot of twisted and mangled, maybe, as you were saying, dark rituals associated. There's a contamination factor now.
Well, that's right. There was a kind of contamination or an infiltration. Your secret societies, people often assume that secret societies are evil, elite-run organizations out to manipulate and control humanity. I mean, that's not true. Secret societies, by virtue of being secret societies, do it because kind of exoteric religions and power structures basically want to eliminate this kind of hidden knowledge. So all the secret societies begin with very positive efforts to try and harness higher consciousness. But then the elites, or say we call them the Satanists, the Luciferians, whatever, the black magicians, then they will go in and infiltrate those secret societies. So whether you're talking about the Rosicrucians or the Freemasons, and many other secret societies, by and large, these organizations all began with very positive goals, but they get subverted. And the same thing happened with the Vril Society, the Thule Society that established Germany's secret space program. These were beings that really had aspirations to join the galaxy, to join the greater brotherhood or sisterhood of the stars. And so that's where they kind of put their energies. But there was a certain degree of infiltration, a certain degree of subversion of that. So the whole thing started to kind of like twist and turn. But it's a power play all the time, because the thing is that the way in which the kind of black magicians operate is that these are beings who themselves do not have great creative ability. They have the ability to subvert and control and manipulate, but they're not very good creators, because to be a really good creator, you need to be in connection with your soul consciousness, with higher consciousness, with the galactic godhead, if you like, whatever name you give it. So the way in which the black magicians operate is to always subvert, always hijack, always manipulate those who do have this ability to be able to tap into higher consciousness and to be able to manufacture incredible things, and then use that for their own purposes.
Mm-hmm. They certainly do. It seems like they've done that all along, with even with patents and things like that, with zero-point energy and things like that. I could elaborate on it. It's such a disservice to everyone on the planet when you think about the control mechanisms involved and the deception. But interesting. I was going to ask you also about the correlation of the, if there is a correlation with the moon and Antarctica and the advanced technology. Are they going back and forth, or did they go back and forth to the dark side of the moon, or have they connections over there?
Well, the moon, obviously, for any society which is developing a space program, it's the logical place to go first. It's the logical place in terms of being able to test your equipment, to be able to develop a staging post to go further afield, like other planets, Mars and so forth. And this is what happened with the Germans. But what occurred with the German secret space program was that, because they were operating in cooperation with one of the groups of extraterrestrials. I mean, as I mentioned earlier, the Vril Society and Maria Orsic, they were working with this kind of Nordic group from Aldebaran, but then you had the Nazi SS kind of coming in, and Hitler, and they began to collaborate more with the reptilians. And so the reptilians had bases on the moon. So after the war, as the Nazi SS gradually infiltrated more and more and took over more and more of the kind of the secret the German secret society space program, it was more co-opted. And so at some point the reptilians allowed the Nazis to establish bases on the moon, in locations that, that the reptilians had control over. And then that was a staging post to go elsewhere. But the important thing about, to keep in mind about the moon, is that the moon is very heavily colonized by different extraterrestrial groups and space programs going back hundreds of thousands of years. So when the Germans showed up first, they needed to make an alliance or establish diplomatic relations with one of the races that were there. It wasn't a question of just showing up and saying, okay, I claim this bit of land in the name of kind of new Germany or New Berlin. You couldn't do that. It was like you could only go up there. You had to form an alliance with one of the ET groups, and they would give you kind of protection and give you access to a place where you could build a base. And so for the Nazi SS, they basically had protection from the reptilians. Now the interesting thing is, and this gets to one of the articles, actually my most recent article on my website, exopolitics.org, is that the U.S. Navy attempted to establish a military presence on the moon. That in the 1960s and the 1970s, they had a program, and the program is called NOVA, N-O-V-A, and they wanted to establish multiple bases on the moon and have basically 10,000 Navy personnel on the moon. So these were going to be military bases on the moon, but the Navy was stopped. Now, this is what the Apollo program was all about, that the Apollo program was really run by the Navy. And what we know of the Apollo program, of Apollo, the Apollo moon missions, Apollo 11 to Apollo 17, that these were all landings. We're told that it was all about, getting these astronauts up there. They'd look around for a little bit, bring some rocks back, and that was it. But that was really the first stage of an ambitious program to colonize the moon. But the problem was that the Navy had not established diplomatic relations with any of the moon races that were, or any of the extraterrestrial races that had a presence on the moon. So when the Navy showed up using NASA and the Apollo program as a surrogate to be able to establish a naval presence on the moon, basically they were kicked off the moon. They were warned off the moon. That's why the Navy had to basically back off and end the Apollo program. And then, of course, the Navy was faced with the dilemma that, well, we can't establish a base on the moon, so what we have to do is collaborate more with one of the existing civilizations or with the Germans, who have established the presence up there themselves. And so that's what they did.
That's fascinating. So it sounds like the Germans are still there with other groups, other species?
The Germans are up there now. They are now part of what is what Corey Good refers to as the Dark Fleet, which is a kind of a hexagonal designed base on the far side of the moon. And and that's really the kind of main base from which the German secret societies now have a presence with the reptilians. But the thing with the German secret societies and the Nazi SS was that they were successful in infiltrating the US military industrial complex. So in a way, Jim Mars is right, that we live in the Fourth Reich. Mm-hmm. It's just being done covertly. And there's a really fascinating book, which is called, the name escapes me for the moment, but basically it's based on something called the Red House document, and it's in 1944 in August, when the Germans realized that the West were going to win the war, that the cause was lost. Martin Bormann, the leader of deputy leader, he basically ran the Nazi Germany on behalf of Hitler. He got the top industrialists and bankers to meet in Strasbourg, France, and basically gave them the go-ahead to start relocating all of their economic resources to friendly countries and begin to invest in corporations which they can then exercise influence and control over, so that after the war, after the military defeat of Nazi Germany, Nazi Germany can rise as an economic power behind the scenes. So the Nazi regime was kind of like the phoenix, but it wouldn't be a military victory that they would achieve; it would be economic victory. And that I think is exactly what happened. That we do have in the United States with the military industrial complex. We had all of these major corporations that have been infiltrated by the Nazi SS and the secret societies, basically established a Fourth Reich in the United States, and certainly in Europe. The European Union is controlled by Germany.
That's really interesting. You say that, and you see what's going on across the board on the timeline. It sure looks like the Fourth Reich to me. It doesn't even seem discreet anymore. It seems like there's a real dark tide coming forward. I was going to ask you really quickly, being on the moon, in my opinion, would change the biomolecular structure and perhaps appearance of someone who's, quote-unquote, on the planet here. Would it change their psyche and consciousness? I would suspect they would completely shape-shift to a level that they might even look extraterrestrial after a while. People who like get bilocated up there or transfer up there from like German. Can you hear me?
From what I know, in terms of, I can hear you. Can you hear me? Okay,
I just want to make sure. I thought I broke up for a second. Yes, I can hear you.
Okay,
yes.
All right. So basically, from what I know, the two main bases up on the moon where humans go are either the Dark Fleet base or Command. But both are kind of like halfway stations, if you like, to other things. Typically, I know as far as lunar operations is concerned, that's a very major facility that used to be a Nazi facility, but after agreements were reached between the secret space programs and the Nazi space program, lunar operations.
Okay.
Yeah, sure. There's two main bases up there that I know that humans go to, the Dark Fleet Base and Lunar Operations Command, but both are kind of halfway stations. Both are places where people go, or secret space program personnel go, whether it's to kind of like be indoctrinated, to be kind of acclimated to off-world operations, and then they're sent off to do things, whether it's on other planets or in the asteroid belt or even kind of like outside of our solar system. So I don't know of people that have been spending extended periods of time on the moon. So, as to your question of whether genetically they change, I don't know about that. But certainly as far as Mars is concerned, I mean, there are people that have, that are born on Mars. Mars is now has multi-generational colonies. Certainly, we can say that genetics there are very different because, the gravity is different.
Mm-hmm. What's really amazing is we still have NASA pictures that indicate nobody's there, right? But we have all these multi-generational societies or races there. So what do you think is happening, and why is there so much deception still with the NASA and all of the airbrushed, quote-unquote, pictures that come in?
Well, you know, I think this is the way in which the secret societies like to operate. You know, they operate through deception. They operate through kind of like manipulating societies, manipulating great numbers of people. So basically keeping kind of...
Are you there? You're breaking up again, I guess. Hang on. I don't see the signal drop. You're breaking up, Michael. Hang on, everybody.
Okay, we had a call drop, and so now we'll try to reestablish contact because it said call drop.
Well, thank you. We'll get him back. That's interesting, huh?
Yeah, he was really clear there, and then it was like he just evaporated.
I'm telling you. Do you have him on Skype or the house number?
No, this is the Skype.
Okay. Guess we can try again. Goodness. Yep.
He could be having trouble with his Skype. His Skype could be fluctuating.
Yeah, he's over on the island there. Technically, I don't think that would have been a problem. Who knows?
Hello.
Hello again. Hi. Sorry about those signal drops. Don't know what's going on.
Yes. Seems that we're getting quite a lot of interference at the moment.
I'm telling you. Well, we were talking about Mars and NASA. Maybe that's why, huh?
Yeah, well, definitely there's some really interesting information about what's really going on Mars. And so Mars is a place where they have a lot of colonies that have been secretly established. This is all done without the majority of the population knowing, and I think it's because the elites that run our planet, you know, want to be able to kind of like manipulate the mass consciousness to utilize all of the economic resources, the human genetic resources, and to use them in whatever way they want, because these people that are kind of running the show behind the scenes, they do want to escape any kind of oversight, any kind of transparency, any kind of accountability. So yeah, doing it all secretly is their way of being able to just kind of do what they want without interference.
Yeah, that's almost unfortunate. It almost seems to me like there's an expendable level here on this planet, an illusion of. I mean, it seems like people here are getting the fuzzy end of the lollipop to some degree, because it would be nice to go to another planet and live and travel the way the covert space program does, or the, you know, whatever you want to call them, secret space program. Is it just for a select group?
Yeah, it is. It's definitely for a select group, because I think one of the things we have to keep in mind is that, you know, this select group understands the power of collective consciousness. They understand the power of being able to manipulate large numbers of people into expressing certain emotional states. Corey Good refers to this as louche energy. So louche energy, I don't know if you've heard of that term, but basically it's kind of like this kind of negative psychic energy that large numbers of people exhibit. So, for example, you go to a football game, you know, that kind of hyper-aggressive energy where, you know, you have different, you know, two different teams and kind of really getting into this mode, this highly emotional, frenzied state. You know, that's an example of louche energy. Wars are an example of louche energy. When you have kind of like nations at loggerheads with one another, where collectively you get great masses of people hating or projecting their fears or whatever it is on the other side. This is all energy that can be harnessed by races that thrive on that kind of thing. And this is something that we kind of misunderstand. Like we have sheep, like the way sheep are treated. Now sheep, of course, can be killed and eaten, and that's one way of manipulating sheep. Another way of manipulating sheep is to feed them well and to just shear them, so you have the wool, you have that resource, and you make things from it. So similarly with humanity at a collective level, you know, we are resource both in terms of physically, genetically, that some ET races might find us a delicacy on their menu. But on the other hand, our loosh energy is kind of like wool, pure wool for them. If you can understand the analogy, how that operates, it's just like they can utilize that for their purposes. So, and I think it's important to understand that, you know, so it's a commodity. It's like you can sell loosh energy. It's like, you know, imagine a kind of a galactic Wall Street in some kind of reptilian world where you're selling loosh energy, pure loosh energy from humans in fear or whatever it is. So yeah, it's a commodity.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Well, what you're seeing on the timeline, at least what I've been experiencing on the timeline, is watching all this drama take place, and there is a lot of what I call negative energy, and it seems to me like that's happening on a mass scale to such an extent that what you're describing sounds like maybe somebody's getting a big belly off of that, because there's a lot of negativity going on right now. And what I also see is as a lot of ascended beings who are very spiritually evolved are almost living in a different world simultaneously. So you have a collision between those of us who are really ascended in consciousness, who hold a higher vibration, and then those who are experiencing a down, nosediving into conflict. So, and then of course you have these perpetrators, which seem like they're creating and orchestrating this conflict, like you were describing, in order to keep everybody locked into this false matrix or frequency fence design work. So I guess it's by design to some degree.
Yeah, I think the matrix is another way of encapsulating exactly how this works. The people that are kind of asleep, they live in this false matrix world, and their energy is secretly sustaining this kind of artificial intelligence. Well, I think in our world, the reality is that the collective consciousness of humanity is being siphoned off to basically benefit certain extraterrestrial groups that rely on that kind of loosh energy. Mm-hmm. For those individuals that are kind of more awake, we are trying to break the collective away from that, you know. So you and I and your listeners, I'm sure, are very familiar with the problems we all face in trying to explain family members or friends or our work colleagues the truth of some of this kind of information that we know to be true, that people are so deeply enmeshed in the matrix that they don't believe that this kind of thing can be going on. And so, yeah, so it's almost like, you know, we are part of this war. You know, we are on the side of trying to awaken people to what's really been happening and how they're being manipulated, and how collective consciousness is being used and directed in a way that just keeps us enslaved. And there are those in the secret societies or the elites that are trying to manipulate us to kind of harness the power of collective consciousness for their own long-term goals.
Mm-hmm. It seems to me like such a violation of free will when they're doing that. So I'd like to see the end game turn around to a point where everybody gets to ascend to a higher frequency and decide where they want to navigate in the space-time continuum without actually dying in the illusion of, just by actually going and traveling through consciousness or phase-shifting or however they choose to get there. But I think that's the ideal behind what we really want to be as star people, in my opinion.
Well, that's the ideal, and up until recently, it's been a very gradual process of awakening. There are more and more people that are now questioning what's really going on. But, you know, by and large, you know, the great majority of humanity are still enmeshed in basic survival kind of issues, and they're not aware of these kinds of broader galactic questions or broader control issues that are happening at a planetary level. You know, for some people, just kind of economic survival is where most of their interest is or their attention is. And we know, sadly, in the United States, how now the American middle class has been kind of decimated. And,
oh, yeah.
What once used to be a kind of very affluent middle class, probably the most affluent middle class on the planet, has shrunk quite a bit, and now, you know, people are basically struggling with these low service, you know, minimum wage jobs, and that's terrible, because, you know, now their consciousness, the anxiety that they experience in not having a kind of high paying job and being trapped in one of these kind of service industry jobs where, you know, you're getting minimum wage or maybe a little bit more, you know, you're now trapped in that, and trying to awaken people out of that is a very difficult and challenging task. Mm-hmm. But there seems to be some kind of game changer happening now, which is very interested in. That's certainly what, you know, Corey Good and the whole kind of raw material, Law of One material talked about.
And what is the game changer? Is that something coming from the Galactic Center, or is that the more of the ascension process, or what?
I think it's more of some kind of, you know, people talk about a region of the galaxy that our solar system and the adjoining solar systems are entering, which is essentially raising the vibration of the entire region of this galaxy.
Right.
And so,
yes.
You know, people have given it many different names, but essentially it's a kind of higher frequency belt that we are entering into, and we will be crossing through that belt for I don't know how many years exactly. You know, people give a different have different estimates, but certainly as we start going through that, and we're probably seeing that now, the frequencies get heightened, and people are able to kind of manifest more quickly, more powerfully. And so, you know, it's like we have to be educated to make the right choices, because if our powers of manifestation are becoming sharper and more powerful and more developed, you know, we have to be very careful that we don't manifest a nightmare for ourselves, that we want to manifest, you know, abundance and grace and peace and all of those wonderful things, rather than kind of struggle, survival and war.
Right.
And we're seeing around the planet, you know, we are seeing kind of like this bifurcation, if you like, where there are certain parts of the planet that are really descending into just outright war. And of course we have these massive refugee problems, but there are other parts of the planet which are experiencing abundance and affluence. And of course, you know, you're having a clash. It's not so much a clash of civilization, but it's almost like, you know, collective groups of people who are able to manifest better societies. Say, like in Europe, you have northern European countries where, you know, for people who come from these war-torn places in the Middle East, you know, they go into a place like Germany or Norway or Denmark. You know, it's like going from hell to heaven for them. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so I think we're seeing that, and I think it's really a question of this being something that we collectively appreciate more, as something that we can take control over through our consciousness, through making the right choices, so that we can experience what we truly desire, rather than be locked into one or the other.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you on that one. You know, where I come from, we call it the photon shift. When I was talking about ascension and DNA activation, it's very similar to that, but some people call it a galactic wave too. But yes, definitely higher frequencies descending onto the world and changing everything. And from what I understand, it's changing everything on a multiversal scale, which means all planets and civilizations expand to higher levels of consciousness simultaneously, instantaneously. So it's quite powerful. And that's what's so amazing to me. When you know that kind of frequencies descending into this world and onto it, activating our DNA and enlightening us, and then you have these opposing forces that are, it's almost like they're jealous. They don't want us to ascend. They don't want us to go to that next level. So I do see that splitting apart at some level. It's got to split, you know, to some degree. They talk about Oritronic versus a full light universe. They talk about the incomplete and a spin-off and a breakaway insofar as planets, maybe even this world, breaking off and becoming two different worlds. What is your impression of that? Do you see anything like that?
Well, definitely. Yeah, that's exactly what is happening. As more and more people awaken and kind of like change their consciousness so that they are not in a place where they are manifesting energies of anxiety, stress, fear, but are in a place where they're manifesting more blissful states or more abundance, or being able to create abundance for themselves out of difficult situations. As more and more people do that, then what happens is that the collective consciousness begins to change, because now, I mean, the thing is that, you know, even though on the one hand the middle class has been shattered in the United States and people have been kind of forced into these low paying jobs from what were previously higher paying jobs in the manufacturing industry, what's happening is that a lot of people are now going back into kind of like organic farming or into kind of like doing creative things, because now, you know, there's not the job security that there once was. And so people are now relying more and more on their creative abilities. And they're finding that they're able to survive, that they're able to thrive. And so you have like this, you know, growth in organic kind of farming. You have a growth in terms of like these internet businesses, you know, and like in my case, for example, I left a career as a university professor where I was given a salary and there was a lot of security there, but I was trapped. You know, as long as I accepted that paycheck month to month, then I was trapped in a certain way of thinking where I was controlled by the system. And it took a certain amount of courage to my, you know, I have to say it, it took a certain amount of courage to kind of break free of that and to take up this kind of like, you know, like quixotic effort to kind of like pursue exopolitics and make a living from it. And it definitely was a real struggle for quite some time. But now I'm finding that it's becoming a lot easier because people are now appreciating that exopolitics is very real and very important. So what was once a real struggle is now something that is providing or sustaining me in terms of like the sales of books and lectures and speaking tours and so forth.
Exactly. Well, the universe accommodates our picture of reality. There's no doubt about that. And of course, you're on a beautiful island, and I think that it supports you on a higher consciousness level. That's just my own take because I lived on Maui, and I know how the energy flows over there. So I think you're a blessing, by the way. It's been an honor to interview you tonight. I just really appreciating you being here with us. It's fascinating. And I did want to point out here, looks like my producer put in a little thing that says the Fourth Reich is here. It's an article if you want to check it out later. So, yeah, once again, there's a little sign there. But once again, as we rise to higher levels of spirituality and trust what I call source, you know, trust your higher self and the multiverse to allow good things to come into your life, and we can break away all these chains that they've tried to hold on to us. And to me, these people, even with the Fourth Reich, they're an after image. They're almost like an afterthought. They're not really in sync with what I call the multiverse. What is your impression of that?
Oh, yeah, they're definitely not in sync with the multiverse because, I mean, their whole modus vivendi has always been about control and power and manipulating others. And that means that, you know, they're not able to harness this energy from source or from these higher planes of consciousness. They're not able to harness it themselves directly because they've closed their heart chakra, that their connection to that source energy is closed. So they kind of have to rely on those around them who are connected to source energy to be able to kind of get that emotional hit or to get that energy kind of upgrade. But as people around them, as people begin to ascend themselves, then the elite lose their control more and more. So it's always these circles because the elite like to surround themselves with talented, creative people that are connected to source and manipulate them. But as these people wake up and break free of the elite, then the elite are denied the very thing that they've been relying on. And so now they're faced with the question of, well, you know, our old methods of control and manipulation are failing. You know, what do we do now? And they're kind of being faced with their own kind of challenge, which is to themselves start to open up and connect with the source, because some of the elites do it, and the ones that do it then go to the other ones and start to tell them, look, it's not so bad, do it, you can experience really a wonderful transition, even though there is, you know, that kind of karmic challenge at the beginning, but in the end they say it's worth it. So yeah, even the elites can change for the better.
Mm-hmm. I would think they would just get it by osmosis alone, just by people in the resonance wave of higher consciousness would eventually get it. But you know, it seems like it's been a really slow-moving tide when it comes down to some of these people in these elite consciousness flow. That's what we all need here. I'm also going to ask you about the – in 1958, you referenced some – I think it was 7 flying saucers that were in S4, and I was wondering if you can elaborate on those a little bit.
Oh, sure. Okay. Well, there are a number of whistleblowers that have talked about going into the S4 facility. This one whistleblower, he used the pseudonym Cooper. He went into the S4 facility as part of a CIA delegation that was under orders from President Eisenhower to find out what was happening at the S4 facility, because Eisenhower had given great power to the Majestic 12 Committee to kind of run the extraterrestrial projects as they saw fit, but definitely wanted to maintain the chain of command, and he wanted to be briefed on what was going on so that he could make the decisions as to, you know, what would eventually be happening there. But he was cut out of the loop, and so Eisenhower had to threaten to use the First Army that was based in Colorado at the time to invade Area 51 and the S4 facility. So he got this CIA delegation to go in there. They saw a number of flying saucers. They saw some ETs. They had a meeting with the ETs there, and they went and had a briefing with Eisenhower to tell him about what they'd seen. But the important thing there was that the whistleblower said that in the S4 facility, he described seven flying saucers. Four of them were from Germany. Three were extraterrestrial. So that gives you an idea about the kind of advances that happened under Nazi Germany and the German secret societies that the U.S. was still playing catch-up as late as 1958.
Mm-hmm. I find that very fascinating. Did he ever describe what kind of metals were used in the craft or the building of the craft?
No, he didn't. He just basically looked at the craft from a hallway. In terms of being able to get that information, Bob Lazar was very much involved in that kind of hands-on experience with the craft. But Cooper, back in 1958, he just basically saw these things on the tour of the S4 facility. He didn't get to work with the craft themselves or have hands-on contact with those. Mm-hmm. So you have to go to Bob Lazar for that.
Yeah, that's fascinating information. Do you think they're still doing similar research and investigations at S4, or do you think things have slowed down a little bit over there?
Well, I think S4 is like a secret space program museum.
Mm-hmm.
It's where the original Vril and extraterrestrial craft went. That became the basis for the reverse engineering of the secret space programs that were built by various corporations. There's a new whistleblower who's recently come forward. He wrote a book called Selected by Extraterrestrials. His name is William Tompkins, and he talks about his involvement in the manufacturing of, in the design and the manufacturing of the secret space programs, of the space carriers and the space battle cruisers that were built for the US Navy. So in the 50s, the US was able to reverse engineer some of the flying saucers that they had at S4, but the Navy was not interested in small flying saucers. This was just a stepping stone into building space cruisers and space carriers that would basically be the host for the smaller flying saucers that were inside of S4. So to build those space cruisers, you had to work with the major corporations, aerospace corporations. So, all corporations like Lockheed, like Northrop Grumman, like Douglas, Boeing, TRW and so forth. All of these corporations at the time were behind this secret effort by the U.S. Navy to develop secret space programs, space cruisers and space carriers that would be used. And this all happened in, these things were all built in Utah, Dugway Proving Grounds out there. This is where they have built and deployed their secret space program, battle fleets.
That's amazing. And how many years ahead? We're talking probably, I would say at least 80 years. I mean, how far ahead are they? And at what point, I mean, are they, how far out in the universe are they? I guess is my question. As far as how much or how far can they travel?
Well, we have different waves of space programs, because first there was the secret societies, the German secret societies and the Nazi SS that developed the first space programs kind of like in our modern era back in the 1930s and 40s. I mean, this is incredible that the Nazis were flying missions to the moon and Mars in the 1940s. And of course, NASA and the Navy sent the first rocket ship to the moon in 1969. The first rockets to the moon in 69. But as far as Mars is concerned, that had to wait for a little bit later, and we still haven't had manned missions to Mars as far as we know. So yeah, so there's a big lag in terms of, what the Germans had achieved, secret space programs have achieved. And also there's a lag between what we we know in the open source literature, in our world, the white world, as it's called, and the black world, the classified world, where they do have anti-gravity technologies, where they do have teleportation technologies, where they do have time travel technologies. These are all used in the black world. So they've reached this level of development with that. So, but they're still playing catch up to what the Nazis had achieved and the German secret societies had achieved. And of course, you know, we in the general public don't know any of this.
Right. That's so unfortunate. I'm just wondering how much universal access they have. It seems like they've made so many breakthroughs with technology, yet there has to be a level of evolution in consciousness to allow them more access to the multiverse. And I guess my question would have been, at what point do they get stopped by another species in their travels through space?
Well, that's a fascinating question, Solara, so really interesting one. I think that it's not a black and white picture. A lot of people often assume that, okay, you know, you've got bad guys, you know, these reptilians, these draconians who go out there and do these terrible things, conquest. I think the way they do it is more along the lines of kind of like subversion and infiltration, establishing a presence and kind of like, going in to protect your people. So if, for example, the reptilians establish a kind of genetic presence on a world, and then that genetic presence is kind of threatened in some way by the kind of indigenous groups, then they have a right to defend themselves. And so I think this is the way in which the reptilians, the draconians, have been able to establish a kind of galactic empire, that they do it through infiltration. They do it by kind of seeding their groups, their people on the planet. And then if their people are threatened in some way, then they have the right to defend them. So in that way, it's for the reptilians, I mean, even though we can regard them as basically galactic conquerors, they really see themselves as protectors. They see themselves as fighting a just war, an ethical war. So this is what we need to kind of keep in mind. Just as the United States believes it's conducting a just war in intervening in these conflicts, such as Libya or Iraq, where they go in there and say, oh, you know, we're going to help an oppressed people and we're going to give them military support and so forth, you know, so that you can kind of like frame your military intervention in terms of these just war principles. But, you know, anyone looking at the big picture can understand that this is a war of conquest. But still, it's done in a way that it's not black and white.
Right. That's a good answer right there. Well, it seems to me like the starseeds are under attack, at least from what I've seen here. With all the conflict that's going on, it seems like a lot of people are being persecuted. I don't want to be color-coded, but to some degree I see a lot of whites being targeted too, and I wonder how much of the star seeds are getting attacked, and I'm wondering at what point is there intervention, or what I would call divine intervention. Even though we're empowering ourselves, it would be nice to have a quote-unquote universal celestial backup insofar as if we are under attack here and we are being persecuted, that there should be some intervention on behalf of the off-world species.
Well, you know, I don't know how much we really want that intervention of the off-world species at this stage, because, yeah, in a way, we've already seen great changes in terms of the ability of light workers to manifest better conditions for themselves and awakening others around them. That, you know, it's a kind of incremental effort, but we're seeing the changes already of that, you know, because there are many light workers that have been able to establish successful industries. You know, I mean, a good example is like GAIM TV with, you have like a whole kind of a grassroots television network, which is putting out these positive transformative messages and shows that is kind of spreading. And we see that with the internet, like the number of alternative news sites and news programs like yours, is a good example. I mean, 20 years ago, there's no way in the world you probably could have had a radio program if you weren't going to basically follow a radio network's dictates in terms of how you conduct a show and what you do. But now it's much easier to create your own radio shows and kind of get remuneration in some way if you're popular and you get lots of listeners, or you get lots of video hits on YouTube, or you get lots of visitors to your website, that you can actually now support yourself in that way. So I think we're seeing a transition. Mm-hmm. And even though it is hard, and I certainly would love for, you know, benevolent ETs to kind of show up and all of a sudden, you know, there it is, the secrecy is over. In a way, I understand the wisdom of why they've been holding back and why they've been kind of helping us behind the scenes and basically saying, no, you know, you can do it yourselves. You know, we're just kind of going to help you from behind the scenes, but you can free the planet through the raising of consciousness and through your own efforts to kind of awaken your brothers and sisters.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Yeah, that's a nice response. I've heard through the grapevine and the illusion of that the CIA was overseeing operations at Area 51 S4 and that somehow the military has been disempowered over there. Now, I don't know if this is even close to being accurate, but from what I understand, the source of the person has some kind of an access. Do you know anything about that, or are you familiar with that?
Yes, definitely. The CIA, from the very beginning of the establishment of Area 51, ran the security of the base. It was not something that was in control of the military. And that suited the MJ-12 group, because the CIA, they could control quite easily, because the CIA is a civilian organization. It was established relatively recently, 1947, with the express goal of raising, the funding for these black programs. And so the CIA from the very beginning has been involved in all kinds of nefarious fundraising activities, and the people running the CIA understood that this was an organization that could be successfully used to kind of like manipulate society and hide these secret programs. The military... The big difference there is that the military, all the officers in the military, they swear allegiance to the Constitution, and so they still do believe in the Constitution. And the military has a heritage going back hundreds of years to the founding of the American Republic. And so the people involved in these senior positions in the U.S. military believe that they're protecting the Republic, protecting military traditions, protecting the Constitution. So that can only be pushed so far, which is why they were kind of like pushed out of control in terms of CIA-run operations at Area 51 and S4, which is why Eisenhower had to threaten the Majestic 12 group that he would invade Area 51 to kind of put it back under presidential military control. He didn't succeed, or quite clearly, and you know what he did achieve was just a stopgap, because what happened with the assassination of President Kennedy was very clearly a coup by the Fourth Reich. Mm-hmm. Essentially, that's when the American Republic ceased to exist, and right. we woke up after Kennedy was killed in the Fourth Reich.
Mm-hmm. It's really interesting. So literally the CIA has been overseeing the operations there since, and they're still doing that?
They are still doing that. That's correct. Okay. Yes. The CIA has been working very closely with the Nazi SS, who relocated, in the Americas, in Antarctica, and also through Operation Paperclip. And so the Nazi SS, the CIA, Majestic 12 have been working very closely together to create this Fourth Reich.
That's really interesting. So the name the military-industrial complex, is that kind of obsolete now, or do they still go by that name?
Well, that was the term President Eisenhower used to refer to what he recognized as this kind of Fourth Reich that was basically taking shape. You know, the thing with Eisenhower, as I mentioned, was that he still had a lot of power. I mean, there was a struggle, a clear mm-hmm. struggle between the Republican constitutional form of government and this kind of Fourth Reich waiting, you know, looming behind the scenes. And Eisenhower was able to kind of like, keep the American Republic alive until his kind of resignation. And then unfortunately with Kennedy in 1960, that's when, the military industrial complex succeeded. And you had the Fourth Reich kind of subverting the whole thing. So in a way, what's happened is that the military has been infiltrated and subverted, through this military industrial complex. Not totally, not completely, which is why after the Kennedy assassination, even though the military kind of like didn't stage a coup, because it was very clear who did this. The Majestic 12 basically took it over, and that was a time when the military, could have staged a coup and said and exposed all the people behind the Kennedy assassination, but they chose not to do that because they recognized that there probably would have been a civil war. But now the American military have been behind a lot of the disclosures, a lot of these whistleblowers coming forward, revealing the truth, and more whistleblowers are coming forward every day, revealing what's really been going on. And I think that, the American military are hoping that through this process, more and more of the American and world public can awaken to the truth, to this Fourth Reich. So I wouldn't say the military-industrial complex is obsolete. It's really become a kind of extension of the Fourth Reich. But the U.S. military is really breaking free of that.
That's good to know. Well, when you think of the Fourth Reich, I just don't see positive things when I think of the Fourth Reich. Unfortunately, I think of oppression and manipulation and mind control and a lot of other things. And in question of Majestic 12, many people have said Majestic 12 wasn't really a real organization, but it actually was a real group of people, right?
Oh, definitely, yeah. I mean, this was appointed by President Truman, and then Eisenhower gave them more power in running these projects, because I think Truman and Eisenhower both understood that you needed to have a control group set up to look after these black projects involving extraterrestrial civilizations, advanced technologies, secret space programs, that this had to be insulated from the kind of conventional political process, where basically you politicians in the United States, it's hard for them to go beyond the 2-year election cycle, because that's all they think about, being reelected. And so, that's how they think, and that can be easily manipulated. So there was good reason to set up a committee of officials that are appointed who are outside of the conventional political process, making the key decisions as to how these projects would be run. What Eisenhower had in mind was that essentially that this committee, Majestic 12, would still report to the president, to the office of the president. So there would be accountability in that way. But what Eisenhower didn't count on was that he would be cut out of the loop. And that's why he made his famous farewell speech in 1961. Beware the power of the military-industrial complex.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Forewarned is forearmed. There's no doubt about that one. So in essence, who really runs the secret space program? We can say the CIA oversees a lot of it, but behind it all, the real puppet masters, who are they?
There's multiple secret space programs. This is the thing. In my book, Insiders Reveal Secret Space Program, I basically go into 5 different secret space programs in terms of the different groups are involved. The first one is a group, is a space program that's run by the Nazis and the German secret societies that began collaborating with the reptilian extraterrestrials. The second space program is a program that was run by the U.S. Navy. It's called Solar Warden. That's a kind of more constitutional form of a space program being run. The third program is called the Interplanetary Corporate Conglomerate. And this is a program that was set up with Majestic 12 or by Majestic 12, where the industrial elite basically hoarded the best space technologies that were being built by the corporations for the U.S. Navy's Solar Warden, and they siphoned off the best technologies and eventually built a parallel program that's called the Interplanetary Corporate Conglomerate, and that's run by Majestic 12 and the power elite in the United States, Britain, and other countries. Then there's a fourth space program, which is run by the United Nations. This program operates largely outside of our solar system, basically trying to develop advanced technologies through agreements with other civilizations for defensive purposes against common enemies. So it's kind of like closer to the Star Trek model of a secret space program. And the fifth program is really a kind of all these special access programs that are all unacknowledged, that all kind of happen off the books, that are really essentially rogue operations that, that really serve their own interests. So this is kind of like a rubric for many different corporate, military-run special access programs that, that really are rogue operations.
Mm-hmm. And how does the Vatican correlate or connect into the secret space program, if at all?
No, the Vatican's been very heavily involved in a number of these programs. They were involved really in many of them because the Vatican has within it its own secret societies, and they cooperated with the Germans, with the Nazi SS that were fleeing Europe, and the Vatican was very helpful to the Nazis in helping relocate them to South America, helping them infiltrate other countries. So the Vatican has been heavily involved in all of these programs that I just named. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's an exception to any of those. So the Vatican, and the thing to keep in mind is that the Vatican has the world's most extensive intelligence service. So it was natural for the Vatican to be involved in this because the Vatican goes back, you know, nearly 2,000 years. It has had a functioning intelligence service going back to the time of the Inquisition, and it has an incredible library, which is unique. It's the most secret library where they have information and intelligence on secret Earth civilizations or inner Earth civilizations that go back thousands of years. So yeah, the Vatican is heavily involved in all of this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd like to check out their catacombs, go through those ancient artifacts and archives and everything else they have down there. It's quite interesting. And of course, there's the Jesuits too. Yeah, that's there's a lot of history there in the illusion of. It's no doubt. You know, we're getting ready to wrap this up in about 10 minutes plus or minus. I can't believe it, Michael. It's gone by so quickly, but it's been such an honor to interview you tonight.